Welcome back to quality number 3 of becoming an intentional creator, completing tasks. Our topic will be living in the now. When writing the curriculum for the coaching practicum, I was studying scroll number 9, I Will Act Now. Og writes, "For now is all I have. Tomorrow is the day reserved for the labor of the lazy. I'm not lazy. Tomorrow is the day when the evil become good. I'm not evil. Tomorrow is the day when the weak become strong. I'm not weak. Tomorrow is the day when the failure will succeed. I'm not a failure. I will act now." After feeling impressed to write down those 4 words, lazy, evil, weak, and failure, it created an acronym, LEWF. And there was something funny about this idea, don't be aloof. And the following words flowed. "I'm not lazy," the aloof said with a smile. "It's all figured out. Got it filed in my file. I'll spend all today relaxing. I'll bet. I'll be rested and ready. Tomorrow to sweat." "Me, evil?" the aloof said with a grin. "How could you utter such nonsense? Such sin? Wait till the morrow, as idle minds would. It'll be out of my system. Tomorrow's for good. So my productivity is down a little this month. And last month and last year, haven't you had a slump?" "Weak?" the aloof questioned. "You insult me today. I could choose to be strong. Is tomorrow okay? Success is the banner that hangs o'er my chair. I see it, I read it, I shout in the air. Can nobody hear me? I mean at this time. A failure? No, no. Tomorrow success will be mine." And so we hear such repetitive oration from aloofs who love procrastination. Everyone knows the price they will pay. For when tomorrow is here, it'll still be today. There is no such thing as tomorrow. It is always today. It is always now. 10 minutes from now, it will still be now. 10 years from now, it will still be now. This pivotal moment in the timeline of our life is where physical creation occurs. An intentional creator brings their vision and passion to this pivotal moment, and it drives their focus and their discipline and their effort and their action. With this, they tirelessly and methodically create their dreams. The now is their home base. They would only leave and go to their minds to get something of value, such as an idea, an impression, or a solution to a challenge. They would never waste time in the dark void of fantasy and catastrophe and counterfeit pleasure. They seek only clarity, purpose, and passion that will support their action. In the now, they control their thoughts and free their natural genius. They know what needs to be done, how to do it, and can marshal the resources needed to complete tasks. They don't know, they find out. They constantly seek to improve their skills and acquire new abilities so that they will be equal to the new opportunities that bring their dreams to fruition. Boring, mundane, repetitious work is foreign to their nature. Every action has a purpose to move them one step closer to their dream. Living in the now, an intentional creator does things in a structured and organized way. They are cautious and prudent and make few mistakes. They take on challenges and details and complexities as they occur in the now. They protect and they maintain what they create. With a clear vision, an intentional creator can enjoy the journey. They know the direction in which they're traveling and why. They know that the journey is a straight and narrow path. Straight, S-T-R-A-I-T. And by definition, a strait is a narrow channel with rocky shores that often follow a circuitous route. This journey requires constant navigational adjustments in the now to avoid dangerous pitfalls. An intentional creator is conscious, living in the now, and at the helm of their life. If we do not know where we're traveling and remain unconscious along the journey, we will inevitably and unnecessarily crash into the jagged rocks and tear the bottom out of our boat. There are enough challenges in our life without creating additional and unnecessary crises by living unconscious and somewhere other than in the now. The power that governs abundance actively participates in both the mental and physical creation of our dreams, albeit the power is manifested very differently in each. If we choose to use our minds constructively while in mental creation, this power manifests ideas and impressions and solutions to problems that will ignite our passion. If we choose to be fully present in the now, fully maximizing the gifts already given in passion-driven action, this power freely endows us with more ability. In the New Testament, we find a powerful parable. Now, whether Christian or not, this principle is worth our consideration. The story is told of a master who is leaving for a period of time. To one of his servants, and I'll take the liberty of calling these servants partners. As a matter of fact, there's a translation of the Bible that actually uses the word partners. Well, to the first one, he gave 5 talents. To a second partner, he gave 2 talents. To a third partner, he gave 1 talent. Now, in those days, a talent was a measurement of gold. But let us remember, parables are meant to be metaphorical. Well, the master went away, and when he returned, he asked for an accounting. The first partner had invested wisely and doubled his 5 talents and now had 10. To this, the master said, "Well done, my good and faithful partner. You've been faithful over a few things. I'll now make you master over many. Enter into the peace of the Lord." The master then turned to the second partner, who had done likewise and was rewarded likewise. However, the third partner buried his talent because of fear. The master took the single talent and gave it to the one with 10. And then said, "Oh, you slothful and unwise servant." The master then summarily dismissed the servant by casting him out into outer darkness where there is wailing and gnashing of teeth. What can we learn from this parable? Could it be that burying our gifts because of fear carries a harsh penalty? Are we going to look at that in terms of eternal implications? We could, I suppose. Perhaps we would find an even more poignant and applicable answer if we just ask ourselves, "What has fear cost me?" Usually when we're in fear, we are not maximizing our natural talents and abilities. This is punishment enough. But could it also cost us an additional endowment of ability? Oh, how tragic that would be. And when we're in passion-driven action, this power also manifests people on our path who can serve us and who we can serve. It is as if miracles are being manifest. Watching this unfold, the unaware call this phenomenon luck. Now, one of my favorite verses in all of literature speaks to this. It's in a little book called As a Man Thinketh, written by James Allen. He writes, "The thoughtless, the ignorant, and the indolent, seeing only the apparent effects of things and not the things themselves, talk of luck, of fortune, and chance. Seeing a man grow rich, they say, 'Well, how lucky he is.' Observing another become intellectual, they exclaim, 'How highly favored he is.' And noting the saintly character and wide influence of another, they remark, 'How chance aids him at every turn.' They do not see the trials and failures and struggles which these men have voluntarily encountered in order to gain their experience. They have no knowledge of the sacrifices they have made, of the undaunted efforts they have put forth, of the faith they have exercised, that they might overcome the apparent insurmountable and realize the vision of their heart." I love that. Vision of their heart, the very thing we've been talking about in terms of our why. They do not know the darkness and the heartaches. They only see the light and joy and call it luck. Do not see the long and arduous journey, but only behold the pleasant goal and call it good fortune. Do not understand the process, but only perceive the result and call it chance. In all human affairs, there are efforts, and there are results. And the strength of the effort is the measure of the result. Chance is not. Gifts, powers, material, intellectual, and spiritual possessions are the fruits of effort. They are thoughts completed, objects accomplished, visions realized. Come with me to the summer of 2007. Now, several years earlier, Ramona and I explored the possibility of purchasing a family cabin. Anticipating children and grandchildren, the cabin would need to accommodate 30 to 40 people. We could see it standing on a mountainside constructed of 12-inch logs, small stream running through the property, and a panoramic view of a large lake. The dream was clear. There was no need to spend valuable time fantasizing about the cabin in an attempt to prematurely experience what it would be like to be there. We did not want a counterfeit version. We wanted the real thing. We wanted a tangible place in tangible reality in which we could visit in the now and create real and lasting memories. We put the dream on our dream shelf where we could clearly see it, stepped back, and began focusing on the steps between where we were at the time and the realization of this dream. During this journey, we experienced a serious financial setback, one that cost us millions of dollars and nearly everything we owned. We relocated and spent 10 years repaying $1 million in debt and 7 more years rebuilding our estate. However, we did not give up on the dream. Instead, we looked to it and other dreams to sustain our passion during those dark hours. Due to the relocation, we were reintroduced to Bear Lake, the backdrop to many of our fondest childhood memories. Eventually, we were able to purchase a condo at the lake, a stopgap. The market was good to us this time, and that property soared in value. With all the financial drama of the past now behind us, and with the needed financial resources now available, it was time to execute, to take the dream off the shelf and make it a reality. Ramona and I took a week off and went to Bear Lake in search of a cabin. A Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday we searched, and to no avail. We knew what we wanted, and we did not need to compromise. Thursday we spent the day reading and relaxing, and that evening, on the way to dinner, we passed a little road. We felt impressed to stop and back up and take a look. Only 100 feet down the road, there it was, everything we had pictured years earlier. We surveyed this inspiring sight, cabin and surroundings. It was clear that it was still under construction, but nearing completion. And we just didn't want to leave. But we did. When we were seated at the Bear Trapper for dinner, I asked the waitress for some paper and a pen. She obliged. While we ate, I drew the familiar floor plan of our dream cabin. Ramona and I shared tender thoughts and laughter and a keen sense of destiny. Dinner completed, we decided to stop by the cabin on the way back to the condo. We turned on the dirt road, and we noticed a pickup truck was now parked out front. We worked our way down the steep bank and climbed up on the porch and poked our head in the door. Anyone here? We're downstairs. May we come in and take a look at your beautiful cabin? Sure. We were met at the stairs by the owner and her good friend, who is now her husband. She looked so familiar, and I told her so. She says, oh, you must know my twin sister. She works with, and she mentioned a company by name. I said, really? I'm Dave Blanchard. I speak often for that company. She says, I've heard you speak. Well, that exchange set into motion an amazing series of events. We asked for permission to look around, which was granted. Much to our amazement, we walked through our floor plan, bedrooms, bathrooms, master suite, kitchen with a long bar built to feed and entertain tons of grandkids, dining area, living room, family room with rock fireplace and a loft. The log construction made it warm and inviting. The cathedral windows in the living room provided a panoramic view of the lake. And in the back of the property, there was a stream. This was the place of our dreams. With the tour completed, the owner shared that she was looking for a partner and asked if we'd be interested. We graciously declined, but stated that we'd be interested in buying the property if they were ever interested in selling. We had a pleasant conversation around that possibility and then parted for the condo. The hint of a possibility left me sleepless. I spent much of the night vividly, mentally rehearsing and exploring possibilities, trying on a myriad of scenarios. By morning, and only in my mind, we had purchased the cabin, had decorated every room, moved in, and had already held several family gatherings. I awoke Ramona at sunrise and asked if she would like to take a little hike down to the cabin, and she excitedly agreed. We were in the basement when my cell phone rang. This is 7 o'clock in the morning. "Hello, Dave Blanchard speaking. Have you been thinking about it?" came the question from a friendly and familiar voice. I'm standing in your basement." She responded, "We need to talk." These were the very words we wanted to hear. We invited our newfound friends up for breakfast. During our visit, we learned that due to the dramatic changes in lending policies nationwide, they were unable to get the takeout loan they desired. They shared that this problem had reached a critical stage. She then shared that if this problem were not solved by Saturday, they would lose the property. She also shared that 10 minutes before we arrived the previous evening, she'd been down by the stream crying and praying, seeking an answer to a seemingly unsolvable and insurmountable challenge. By noon, we had purchased the cabin, made them financially whole, including the one thing they wanted most, to be able to spend a week a year each summer at the cabin for the next 5 years. The power that governs abundance knew their dilemma and knew our heart's desire. We were ready and able to execute, having taken each sequential step leading up to this moment. We were in passion-driven action, and the power that governs abundance facilitated a miracle. To the unaware, this may have appeared to be just dumb luck. I hope you're okay with me sharing personal stories. This is not about narcissism, but instead vulnerability and testimony. These were painful lessons to learn because of my resistant and often rebellious nature. The power that governs abundance loved me enough to cut out my proud heart with a dull knife. That is what I needed. It is our desire that you will be more courageous and surrender quickly and embrace these principles. What awaits you is nothing short of a miracle. Every time we go to the cabin or pause and reflect on this gift, we experience a deep sense of gratitude and wonder and awe and joy. There is no comparison between these very real feelings and the euphoric yet artificial and counterfeit feelings created by large doses of norepinephrine, which are released when we choose to engage in escape and avoid fantasies. The latter is being experienced by far too many who are actively seeking financial abundance, and the consequences are deadly to dreams. It is time to become an intentional creator. This story about the cabin is particularly sensitive to today. I'm sitting here in my office, in my recording studio on a Saturday. And that couple and their family are up at the cabin right now in a family reunion. How cool is that? It was October of 1991. We were drowning in discouragement and debt. Ramona was about to provide the fire that would ignite the courage needed for us to finally move up and out of that very deep and dark pit. Determined to become a scriptwriter, I had been pounding on the keyboard of my computer 8 to 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for the past 21 months, 3 feature film scripts completed, and a 4th nearing completion. Ramona asked me to take a break and accompany her and her running partner, Kaloy Hanna, a neighbor and a good friend, to St. George, Utah, where they were going to run the St. George Marathon. For several months, Ramona and Kaloy had faithfully followed a strict daily running schedule that culminated in a 21-mile run the previous Saturday. As we drove to St. George, I heard training story after training story from the last several months, including how they would strategically hide water bottles along their path for the longer runs, and of course, restroom challenges. We laughed so hard that if we were drinking milk, it would have come out our noses. Where had I been all of these months? Apparently focused on my stuff, but unconscious to Ramona. There was a little nip in the early morning air as I dropped the runners off close to the starting line. The race would begin in about 30 minutes and travel the requisite 26.2 miles along the red rocks that line this beautiful southern Utah community. Ramona was focused and prepared. She confidently nodded as she exited the vehicle, and I said something inane like, wish you the best. My awareness became heightened as Ramona and Kaloy disappeared into that pre-dawn throng, and I began thinking of so many things that I should have said. Well, I parked the car and I waited. Although spectators could not get near the starting line, the word soon rippled through the crowd that they're off. Well, the minutes ticked by slowly. I became increasingly conscious of what was transpiring on that mountain road above us. As the sun rose and began to heat the October sky, I was getting thirsty. Then I began to feel Ramona's thirst. As 1 hour turned into two, I became increasingly anxious and concerned. By the time the first failed or injured runners were brought to the first aid station close to the finish line, my heart was pounding. What was she attempting to do? What had driven her to take on something so monumental? Why had I been so blind, so preoccupied and insensitive during all those weeks and months of preparation? I'm sure she could have used more support. Despite my preoccupation with writing and digging us out of a financial pit, Ramona always remained calm, trusting, and supportive. She always ran 6 days a week while maintaining the multitudinous tasks of being the consummate mother to seven young children. There was never a complaint, never. There's a lesson in this. I reflected on the painful moment 21 months earlier, when all of our possessions were loaded in two-rider trucks, and we drove away from our dream home in California. I let out, my father followed in the second truck, and Ramona and our children followed in our 12-passenger Ford van, the kids affectionately tagged the Poolog. I was a scoutmaster, and you can imagine 2 liters and 10 kids back there eating donuts and passing gas. You kind of get an idea why I got that name. Well, tears were streaming down my cheeks and dripping on my shirt. I rounded the corner of the driveway, and I turned to look one last time at our failed dream. It was then that I saw Ramona pulling out of the driveway while leading the children in a rousing chorus of one of her favorite camp songs. She smiled and waved, and I was devastated. Ramona was in the now, spreading peace. There's a lesson in this. My mind then shifted to a week later when we arrived in Utah and were looking for a new home. One night she sat down and took off her ring, a 3.1-carat diamond ring I'd given her for our 10th wedding anniversary, and said, "I don't need this anymore. I can wear the one you gave me when we were first married. Please sell it and use the money to buy our new house." There's a lesson in this. 2 hours turned into three, and I was beginning to ache for her. "Keep pushing, sweetheart," I spoke in silence and screamed in my soul. "You can do this. If anyone can, you can." I remember I threw my fist in the air as if to send Ramona all the energy I could muster. As it neared the fourth hour, I left the finish line and began working my way through the crowd and up the path about a quarter mile, hoping to get a glimpse of my champion. Tears began to spontaneously flow in anticipation as exhausted runner after runner passed and we all cheered them on. And then suddenly there she was. Yes. I cheered as I attempted to run alongside. It was clear that Ramona was thoroughly spent. I could feel her reaching deep into her soul way beyond physical capacity that was exhausted many miles prior. the finish line now in sight. I shouted, "I love you. You're almost there." Ramona mustered a smile and a confident nod. There's a lesson in this. The finish line finally came. I rushed to the fence that separated the runners from the cheering crowd, and Ramona saw me and approached the fence. Draped around her neck was the prize St. George Marathon medallion. She proudly held it up for me to see. And we reached to the fence, interlocking our fingers. We looked deep into each other's eyes and cried. Little needed to be said. I imagine that this must be much like the reunion we'll have with our God. When we return home after having successfully finished the marathon called life, one of us will go first, and one will be waiting. That day I saw my God differently. He is our greatest cheerleader, encouraging us in moments of weakness and doubt, buoying us up when we fail, inspiring us to reach deep and discover newfound ability. I could hear his voice in my heart as he spoke words to Ramona, "Well done, my good and faithful daughter." "Yes," I exclaimed, "well done, Ramona. Well done." What a sweet reunion. Ramona had given all that she had. She always does. She had conquered her fears and doubts. She was victorious. It was inspiring and encouraging and humbling to witness. It breathed new life into our partnership and new blood into my tired heart. And there is a lesson in this. We stayed for the award ceremony, not wanting to leave. As they gave out the awards for the top three finishers in specific categories, we suddenly and unexpectedly heard a familiar name. Second place, Ramona Blanchard. What a sweet ending to a simply amazing experience. Now, Ramona's not the first person to run a marathon, nor did she beat a world record. But here's the secret. It was her dream to run a marathon. She had a clear vision of all the steps between where she was the first day that they did a practice run and the finish line of the marathon. She got up every morning and asked, "Why am I here?" The question ignited her passion and drove the action needed to bring the dream to tangible reality. Those decisions were made in the now. The work was done in the now. Each step of the marathon was accomplished in the now. The victory was in the now. And the joy was real, because the dream had become a reality. This joyful moment was replayed again in April of 2008 when Ramona, our four grown and married daughters, and one daughter-in-law completed the Las Vegas Iron Girl Sprint Triathlon. In preparation and for several weeks in advance of the race, Ramona faithfully rose at 5:30 a.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to swim, and on Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays to run and bike. All of the hard work and discipline brought Ramona to the final quarter mile of the race, where she was met by her daughters who had already finished. They supported her by running alongside while singing the chorus, "We are the champions." Close to the finish line, they peeled off and Ramona crossed, arms raised and triumphant. They all did well, but there would be no formal awards that day. But there was a conscious and grateful husband, carrying a grandchild on his shoulders, absolutely living in the now. Ramona has that effect on people. Thank you, sweetheart, for those moments and for so many others in which you modeled the message. Stay focused on the dream above your head while taking the passion-driven action required to bring that dream to fruition. The quality of completing tasks requires that we live in the now. The now becomes our primary residence. We will visit the sacred space of our mind on occasions, but only as a reminder or reference point, or to create additional clarity regarding our vision. This will assist us in creating or sustaining our passion. When we embrace becoming an intentional creator, we do not want to escape from life, but instead want to engage in life. And driven by our vision and resultant passion, we will work tirelessly without counting the costs.